Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as some video and occasional audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genre. Speaking of best-selling, our interview this month is with international best-selling suspense writer and friend of the show, Robert Dagoni. We talked about his recent success and his long journey to get there, and his approach to craft and inspiration, and just a great conversation with a great guy. You can find that at authormagazine.org. And I should note that Robert Dagoni is going to be the keynote speaker at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association's 61st Writers Conference, which begins in just a couple days, boys and girls. He's going to be speaking there. I'm going to be teaching there. Oh, it's going to be a great conference. I think you can probably still grab a spot if you really want to. You can even sign up for his masterclass. He's teaching with Stephen James on the art of writing. Bob Mayer is teaching a special master class on Thursday on the business side of writing, and I'm teaching a memoir class or a master class for memoir writers also. Those are all on Thursday. You can even sign up just for those at a reduced cost for sort of a little one-day mini conference. It's a great conference. Pacific Northwest Writers Association supports Author to Author. We love them. And go find out more at pnwa.org. Well, we're back again. Fearless writing, everybody. Fearless writing, that's what we're talking about today, and I'm here, as always, with my co-host, fellow author, fellow teacher, fellow podcaster, Mr. R.J. You know him as R.J. Jeffries, I know him as Jeffrey. Hello, Jeffrey, how are you doing?
Doing very, very well. I'm so excited about having our third installment of this incredible series, Bill. I'm learning, and I know that all of our listeners are as well. I'm very excited about today again.
You know who else is learning, Jeff? Do you know who else is learning?
Who might that be?
Me. I learn every day. I really feel as though I learn as much, if not more, than my students, whether it's in this format or the classes. I learn every time I teach. I love it. It's a creative experience. I look forward to it. As you said, this is our third, and I hope there will be more. We're going to take a break from it for a couple of weeks, but I think we're going to come back to it. What do you think?
I'm looking forward to it. It's a necessary, must-have show.
And as you know, fellow writers, sort of the idea here is this. When I talk about fearless writing, I'm really talking about you writing from your place of true, inherent, creative confidence. And for me, one's inherent creative confidence is our unconditional love for the story we're telling. Unconditional love, meaning you love that story, you're writing that story, and you love it simply because you love it. You're interested in it simply because you're interested in it. Your interest in it has nothing whatsoever to do with how many copies it will sell or how much money you'll make, what other people think of it. All that you will learn about once the thing is written. But the actual writing itself, the place you rest when you write, your fearless platform from which you write everything of value you want to share with the world, is a place that says, that knows that the fact that you're interested in something is enough of a reason to write it. And this Fearless Writing class is all about how to go to that place and stay there. Once you're in that place, I remember Ernest Hemingway in A Movable Feast said something that at the time I thought was weird, but I think I understood what he meant now, at least from my experience. He said, work solves everything, which I thought was a strange thing to say, but I got to tell you, when you get into that flow that I talked about, when you're in that fearless place, your troubles do dissolve. It's true. All the things that seemed like a problem are no longer a problem because you are absolutely connected to all your strength, your inherent creativity, to love, to the intelligence of the universe, really. It is the best place to be. And so in that way, I think he was right. It does solve everything. And so we've gotten questions from a great many of our listeners, and Jeff has collected them. I see we already have a caller who we're going to invite on the show here. I see you. Don't you worry. We're going to have you on the show. We're going to have that caller on here in a minute. But I wanted to start with you, Jeff. I know you had a question sort of hungover from last week. Is that right?
I do. I do. And it's something. It's more than a question. It's a need to really seek the answer. Where you sit down and you write these phenomenal, if people have not read any of your essays at Author Magazine, I insist they go there after, right after the show and read at least five of them. They are just exemplary. You are an amazing essayist, and I've learned just so much from reading them about my own craft, about life in general. And my wonderment is how you've been able to get into that zone almost automatically and produce such incredible work.
Yeah, we talked about that last week, and I talked about some of the sort of my thinking about it at the time, which was certain tricks I did for myself, which were to give myself only 45 minutes and to not worry about perfecting it, and that I would sort of learn how to write these pieces in such a short amount of time over the long haul. So I looked upon all that work as one big body of work. But that was one kind of answer. There's another aspect to it that I think you're pointing to, which is really, I couldn't have written those things, Jeff, if I didn't go to that place of fearless writing that I'm describing about now, that place of sort of unconditional love for what I'm writing about. All of my essays, by the way, all of my essays are about the same thing. They all say the same thing, which is everything's okay, even when it looks like everything's not okay. That's all I ever say. That's the same thing. 2,000 times I've said it. Everything's okay, even when it looks like everything's not okay. That is the only message I sort of have for the world, you could say. And so that's what I would go to the desk to write about. But in order to write about that in a clear, original, imaginative way, I had to get into that flow that I've described. Enter that fearless place. So how do you do that? How do you do it on purpose? On purpose. This is what I'm talking about here, because you all have done it. You've all been there. You've been there, Jeff, haven't you? Haven't you had those moments where you're writing along and all of a sudden you're deep into something and what you're writing is coming to you, and maybe you're not taking dictation exactly, but you feel more like you're following than you're leading, more like you're listening than you're thinking. You must have entered that state from time to time in your work.
I have said that so many times, especially with my poetry. I feel like I've just dictated it, not written it.
Great. And it's a wonderful experience, right? And every writer I know, no matter where they are in their writing journey, has experienced that. It is the reason they keep writing. If they didn't experience that, they wouldn't want to keep writing, because it's such a pleasurable experience. There's all the questions about what will happen to our work after we do that. But that experience in and of itself is so delightful, is so empowering, is so freeing, that it is what really brings us back again and again. But the question is this: can we do it on purpose, or is it something that just happens accidentally? And I believe you can do it on purpose. And here would be my suggestions as to how to do it on purpose. The first thing I would start with is this. When we're talking about that flow, that place where you, that sort of dream state where you lose track of time, where things seem to be coming to you, where you have no judgment of good and bad, that's just the word that belongs or the word that doesn't belong, the first thing you have to do is understand that you have to believe it exists. What do I mean by that? When you're not in the flow, when you're not in that dream state, it feels just like that, a dream. It feels like a different kind of reality. You're not currently experiencing that, which is to say, I'm not in the mood to write usually when I sit down to write. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that experience, Jeff, but it's true. When I go to the desk, I'm not in that moment, in that flow. I understand there's a distance I'm going to have to travel from where I am mentally to where that flow exists. And so in this way, I have to believe I can get there, even though I'm not currently there. And even though that state of mind seems so foreign to what I'm currently going through, where I'm caught up in all my problems of the day and the problems I want to solve and the things I'm worried about, that creative flow isn't worried about who gets elected or how much money I have or the bills I have to pay. It's a totally different state of being. It's so effortless. And so the first thing I have to do is believe it exists, even though I'm not experiencing it. Does that make sense?
It certainly, most certainly does.
Okay, so you have to say to yourself, I know I'm not going through it now. I know I can't feel that, but it's there. So let me ask you this, Jeff. When you're getting ready to write, and I want you to be very honest about this, I want you to picture what is waiting for you. Where do you write, by the way? Do you write in the same place every day, or do you move around?
Same place every day, absolutely. My little sanctum.
Okay, so your picture, so your sanctuary. It's time for Jeff to write now, okay? I want you to picture, it's time to get up and go to that sanctuary. Now, I want you to be absolutely honest and tell me what you picture is about to happen in your mind. But let me give you an example. This is what I go through now, okay? This is what I picture.
Okay.
When I go to write. I picture, first I picture that state I want to enter, that creative flow that I seek, that I'm usually not in at that time. I picture what that feels like. What does that feel like, even though I'm not in it? What does it feel like to be effortless? What does it feel like to be excited and chasing something and hot on the trail of something? That's what I'm shooting for. I'm not in that, but that's the emotional state I'm aiming for. So I picture that, and in my mind, it's really like I picture a river running. That's why the word flow works so well for me. So I picture that, but then in my mind, I always see this space between where I am and where it is. And so in my mind, I know my first job is to cross the distance between where I am and where that flow is. I know that what's waiting for me almost every time is a little journey to that state of being, that I can't start there, that I rarely start there. And so my expectation is I have to begin by moving myself mentally from where I am in my sort of domestic life to this creative flow that really doesn't care about my wife or my kids or politics or anything else. Does that make sense?
It most certainly does.
So that's what I'm picturing. That's what's waiting for me. And it wasn't always the case. It used to be, am I going to get this right? How's it going to go today? Geez, I hope I can find that, make the story work. What if I don't finish it? So there used to be different threats waiting for me. It's no longer the case. So what do you see waiting for you when you're going to work?
The blank page no longer frightens me. That
okay.
I don't know. Look at it. Well, okay, what's going to be there? What I do and what I find makes me the most effective at what I'm doing in my craft, excuse me, is to just let all the external thoughts, feelings, everything else, I would say analogous to a meditative state, to find
That's right.
the straight
good.
Conduit best that I can from my subconscious to that written page. That way
That's
there's
good.
Nothing consciously interfering that or blocking that flow. That's when
but
I
what
find
do you picture? What is emotionally what's waiting for you? And be absolutely honest. It's time to write. What do you picture?
Honestly, for what's me, a feeling of joy, of love.
Okay, good.
You used it so well with love. A feeling of impending joy. Not doom,
good.
But impending joy.
All right, good. So here's what I would say about getting into that flow to all listeners. Then we're going to take a question here from our caller. Don't worry, caller. We see you there. It's very important, I believe, to understand, to view writing as a practice, not of getting it right, not of how many words, at least I can't view it this way, of how many pages you wrote that day, or of fixing the story, but a practice of moving from where you start your working experience, which is usually, again, not in that writing frame of mind, the practice of moving into that creative, flowing, writing state of mind, of the practice of moving into that dreamlike state. And just like Jeff said, it begins by releasing all the thinking that you have about the day, all the thinking about your kids or your husband or wife or your job or whatever those things are. You have to let all that go in order to begin doing the work. You have to have the practice of turning your attention from all those thoughts, which can be so compelling and attractive, to the thought of the story. And the reason we focus on it as a practice is if it's a practice, we don't beat ourselves up if it doesn't happen quickly. We don't ask ourselves questions like, what's wrong with me today? What's wrong with me? Why can't I get into the flow? Why isn't it coming today? The only question is you simply haven't found it. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing ever, 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 ever wrong with you. Not ever, not once. The muse is always talking, but some days it's easier to listen than others. Not because there's something wrong with you, not because you're not talented, not because you're not smart, not because you can't write, but just because you haven't found it that day. Does that make sense?
Most perfect. Yes, absolutely it does. It takes the onus off of it. You're writing again. You're falling out of love with your writing if you're dreading it.
That's right. If you begin to dread it, it's because you think you have to get it right or because you're going to go there and try and prove how intelligent you are, and it just won't work. Just won't work. Okay, we must get to our first caller and see what his or her questions are. Hello, how are you doing?
Hello, Bill. This is Lynn.
Why, hello, Lynn. For those of you, well, you wouldn't know, but Lynn is a student of mine, someone I've worked with in the past. Lynn, how are you doing?
I'm good. I was in the Apple store, and I realized, oh, my God, it's Bill's radio. I ran out of there.
Oh, wow.
Because I could not wait to talk. And I was glad that you weren't getting my question right away, because I suddenly thought, I don't know what to ask. You seem to always answer the question, so it's sort of embarrassing to even try, because I don't know. Anyway, I will get to my
Lay it on me, Lynn.
Okay. well, you always write about this one thing, love of the story, etc.
Yeah.
And I agree with the person that was talking right away, I guess it was Jeff, about reading all your essays. They are phenomenal.
Thank you.
So I'm trying to form my question, so my mouth is running.
That's fine.
Lynn, let me interject. You're among friends. We're you know, if you're one of us, it's fine.
That's right. Just take a deep breath.
Okay. Okay. The last thing that I wrote that I was most happy with and proud of was, well, two things. My dad's obituary for the paper, and my mother-in-law's, I don't know if you call it an obituary, the talk I gave at her memorial service.
Okay.
Which was, it was a letter that I'd written to her on her 70th birthday, telling her how I felt about her.
Okay.
So why I'm getting to that is that's when I've been
You're fading out on us, Lynn. Can you repeat that last bit?
I
can.
Okay. That's when I felt that the writing was just being dictated to me, even though I felt like my own voice. So,
You want to say, how do I get into that state? I want to duplicate that.
Because those were both things that I knew, not published for money, but I knew I was in control. I was giving to someone. I love to give through my writing. It feels like giving to myself. It feels like authentic voice and all that connected to the universe. But just to come to the blank page.
So here's what I would say to that. Here's what I would say to that, Lynn. Here's what I think. So you had this unique experience of you were writing about two people you loved after they had passed. Mm-hmm. And you were able to connect what you felt was a really authentic and moving and honest way, and wrote rather effortlessly and in a way that you felt you shared something with other people that wasn't just about these two people that everyone loved, but maybe something about life itself a little bit in there too?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What happened was, the reason you were able to do that was because of the format of speaking about these two people you loved and whose relationship you weren't questioning what you had learned and what you understood about life and what you understood about them because of the unique close relationship you had. You weren't questioning yourself at all. You knew the value of what they had given you because of their relationship, and because they had passed away, and because this was so final in this way, you freed yourself up to allow yourself to speak without judging what you were saying. Does this make sense?
Yes. That's right.
That's right. And so all that happened was you created circumstances that allowed you to open a door to something that you could open to at any time. And so know that when you think about writing, I want you to forget about the specifics of how you wrote for your mom and dad. You actually don't need that kind of specific experience to have the writing experience that you had. But I want you to think about what it felt like, not the words you wrote, but simply what it felt like to write the obituary in that speech, and know that. That experience is the guide to the next writing experience you have if you sit down to write about, say, things from The Course in Miracles, which I know you're very connected to.
Mm-hmm.
And that your job when you sit down to write is to tune in, just like I was saying to Jeff, in that your interest in the piece is just your interest in the piece. You don't have to think about anything other than why whatever the subject you're talking about is interesting to you. You don't have to think for one moment about what anyone else will think when they read it. You don't have to wonder if it's any good. You don't have to ask yourself if it will get published or not. All you're required to do is say, why is this interesting and important to me, and how could I write about it in a way so that what I find useful and important about this passage, say, from Course in Miracles, how could I write about it in a way so that someone else could understand what I understood? Let me see what happens. If you can focus on those two things, Lynn, what it felt like when you opened the door to that sort of language, that creative language when writing for your parents, and the next thing you want to write on, your interest on the next thing you want to write about, you will begin to develop the practice of letting that door open every time you write, or at least maybe half the time you write, and then maybe three quarters of the time you write, and on like that. Does that make sense?
It sort of, but I don't believe it. I mean, you know what? Because it's not even 1%. It's not happening now. I get the feeling. But I'm still stuck on I was highly motivated and inspired. Not even motivated. That sounds sort of like work. It just came because there was a purpose to it and a point. So I have I know how to transfer it.
Okay. There is always a purpose to writing, but you were thinking about the external purpose. It's going to publish in the newspaper. I'm going to speak in front of people. So you were thinking about the end result, right? I mean,
yeah.
When you say purpose, you knew that you were going to be in front of people and you were going to share this with them in some way, or it was going to publish in the paper and you knew it was going to be shared with people. Is that right?
Yes, or a letter that was just going to be read by one person.
That's right. So, great. Now, if you really want to learn to write, you want to learn that those eventual results, those end results of whether a letter read by one person or a speech in front of the crowd or an obituary in the paper, those come after the connection, that the real purpose to writing is that connection. And then once you write from that connected place, you can then learn what its eventual destination will be. You don't actually have to know first where it's going to go before you start it. You let your beginning place be simply Lynn's interest. That's the purpose. Lynn is interested. That's meaningful. You don't need to know where it's going to go to know that Lynn means something. Lynn is meaningful right now, right there, for no reason, whether she's published or not, she's meaningful. Do you understand? You don't need a result to know it.
I was already in that connection when I wrote it, even though it appeared that it was the end result of people reading
you
it.
You used it as an excuse.
Connected.
That's
yes.
right.
Yes.
You used it as an excuse. So now do it without excuses.
Yes.
Now listen, I'm going to get to other questions, but here's the thing you to do for me, Lynn. Understand it's a practice. And if you can do it 1% of the time, you could do it 2% of the time. It's a practice. It's not something – if you go tomorrow and you stare at the blank page for an hour, it doesn't mean you failed. It means you practiced and you're going to try again. It's a practice.
Okay.
You do not have to get it perfectly. You are not here to nail it right. You're here to learn and learn and learn and learn.
Oh, thank you, Bill. And my phone's dying, so it must mean you need
All right, Lynn, good luck.
Thanks, Bill. Fantastic.
Thank you. All right, Jeff. That was a good one.
That was an excellent question. There aren't any
I've extended
questions.
It slightly
there
so we can take at least one more question.
Bad questions, Bill. They're just not, especially coming from writers. I'm so impressed about how well they are composed, these questions
That's
I received
great.
To ask you. My hat tip to that as well. And would you like to get to our first written one?
Sure, let's do it. Like I said, I stretched the time out a little bit so we can maybe get one or two more.
And this one came in chat, so I'd like to follow sort of the lead from the phone to
Excellent.
The chat online.
Yep.
Might be a familiar name to you. It's from Judy Kenauer.
Oh, Yes, I know that name.
I sometimes, and once again, I didn't mispronounce that. If I ask any of the questions, first I just want to say very quickly, thank all the amazing writers and poets who graciously and generously sent their writing craft questions for today's show, and I'll do my best to not mispronounce your names. Anyways, the question from Judy is, I sometimes feel like, oh, what's the point? This will probably never get published, and no one will ever read it. I have a hard time getting over that sometimes. That sounds very familiar.
Oh, it's totally familiar. And so what I always say to writers is this. I know that Judy writes without an outline. She writes without any outline. She sits down, and this is an interesting – the challenge that every writer faces, which is what's the point? I know I want to write, but I don't know what's going to happen with it. Whether it's going to get published or not is somewhere out way in the future, right, out beyond – you've got to finish the thing and then you've got to send it out and blah, blah, blah. There's all these questions about what will happen to it and you can't see it and you don't know. And you can't understand the connection between sitting down at the desk and writing all alone there, you and your computer. You can't connect that experience to a New York Times bestselling novel. There seems to be no logical or perceivable connection between the two. However, everything a writer does teaches them how that experience happens. So, for instance, when a writer like Judy sits down to work, she does not know, let's say she's going to write a scene. She might know who's going to be in the scene and maybe loosely what's going to happen, maybe where they are and maybe what she generally wants to have happen. Two people have a conversation about, say, softball. But I know the way she works, she doesn't know anything else. She doesn't know what they're going to say. She doesn't know probably exactly where the conversation is going to go. She knows that that's not her job as a writer. Her job is just to sit down, get interested, and see what happens, and let all the little details fill themselves in. She doesn't sit down to write and say, well, what's the point of writing this scene until I know every single thing that's going to happen? She knows that it's not her job to know every single thing that's going to happen. It's her job to simply be interested and let the details come and let the details come and let the details come, and then a scene is finished. And then another scene is finished, and then another scene is finished, and another scene is finished, and maybe after 3 months or 6 months or a year, you have a book, right? Is that not how we do it, Jeff? We write, and then we don't know the details. 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 What Judy has to learn, which is what almost every beginning or writers who are still at the beginning part of their journey have to learn who have not yet seen their work published, is that the same process is active in the publishing. You can't possibly know how that work is going to find its way to the world in the same way you can't possibly know every single scene that's going to be written in your book before it's written. The difference is, as a writer, you don't worry about it. You know somehow or another, you can make the connection in your mind between the experience of I've got an idea for a book and a finished book, if you've ever finished a book. You understand that the imaginative link between the concept, I want to write about a woman who decides she wants to swim across the English Channel, that simple thought, and a finished book about a woman who wants to swim across the English Channel. And you are not, as a writer, daunted by all the details you don't know. You are not daunted by the fact that you don't know what's going to happen on every single page or what that book's going to look like when it's finished. The same is true of what we call the publishing process. By and by, as a writer, once you start seeing your work published, you understand the link between sitting down at your desk and seeing that, say, appear in the New York Times or in a book by Penguin. But even though you don't know all the details that's going to bring those events about, all that's happening to Judy is she's saying, I don't see how this is going to happen, and therefore I doubt it will, simply because I can't see it. But if she were to apply the same process, the same creative process that she applies to the page, where she says, I don't know what's going to happen in this scene, but I don't need to. I just need to be interested and love it and care about it. If she just said to herself, I don't have to know how it's going to get published. I just have to love it and care about it, and it will happen. She would see her work go out to the world and be published much quicker. But if she demands she knows exactly what's going to happen to that work before it happens, yes, she is creating a situation in her mind which is sort of untenable, where she's saying, somehow I have to be able to predict the future before I begin this piece, right? I have to be able to predict the future. Why do it if I know it's not, if I don't know it's going to work out? And it's not your job, it's not any of our jobs to know. All the little successes that I have had have not come by my plan. I've had my plans, and they've never worked out. It's just like you're the outlines, those people who outline. You make your outline, and then there's the book you write. Usually they're not quite the same.
Or sometimes
I hope
they're
that is helpful,
exact
Judy.
Opposite.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know what to say. These shows, it's like we've entered a multiverse that's much faster than real time. These shows go by so fast. I can't believe we're almost done. Do you want to take one more question?
I do, and I want to say one more thing to our listeners.
Please.
Briefly. When I am not talking to you as a writer. I'm talking to you as a person. And there's some myth about writing, teaching, and writing itself that somehow you can extract your humanity, your whole life, all your little fears and dreams, your relationships with your parents and your children, and your thoughts about politics and your thoughts just about life and death and God and love. Somehow all those can be extracted from the craft of writing. It can't. You're a human first and a writer second. And I'm speaking to you as a person. I'm speaking to you now just as the human being who wants to write. And most of the challenges have nothing to do with writing and everything to do with being human, in my mind. Okay, next one. Last one, I guess.
It is. It's by Russ Hutto, or Hutto. His name is spelled H-U-T-T-O. And
okay.
I hear this from every one of my writers. We both coach, teach writing.
Yep.
And I hear this question every time from every student. I think I wrestle most with process, wanting to be, capital letters, a full-time writer, but only have a few hours a day to dedicate to the craft, advice.
Right. And so this is what you do. You say, whatever you have, whatever time you have, if it's 15 minutes, I know of a woman who wrote a screenplay, wrote a novel, her first novel, on the bus to work. I know of another guy who wrote his novel on the ferry to work. What's her name? Diablo Cody wrote Juno, I think, on breaks from her job, wherever she was working.
Yes.
Whatever time you have, and this is critical, whatever time you have as a writer, give yourself that time completely. In other words, allow yourself to be completely present for the time you actually have. If you do that, so don't, if you go there and are already worrying about how much time you have committed to it, that it's not enough, or that maybe this is a waste of time, how do I know that this time is well spent? I could be doing it, I could be with my kids, I could be making money doing a little something else, I don't know what it is. No. You go to that time, however much time it is, I don't care if it's 15 minutes or an hour or 2 hours, and you let yourself have it completely. You allow yourself to sink completely into that experience. I wrote little symphonies for myself in 15-minute increments while my sons were eating cereal, because that's the time I had. And I let myself sink completely for 15 minutes into writing those little symphonettes, and they got written. So...
So can
if you
I
allow
that,
yourself, what's
can
that?
Can I expand on that for just a moment as we close the
sure.
show?
Sure.
Here's what I say to my clients, my friends. I call them my friends, my people that want to do what I do and love and want to be in love with it as much as I do. I say to them, make a public acknowledgement to everyone you know that's close to you that you're going to have 15 minutes this time during this coming week. And unless someone is literally on fire, that's your special time, and you're not to be disturbed. And you will be astonished, if you continue to do that, how much you produce in just 15 minutes.
That's correct. Or even a half an hour. Or,
yep.
or yes, 15
but
minutes,
I
half
like
an hour, hour, whatever
I
it is. But you give it to yourself completely.
Yep.
You give it completely, and you it is not your job. Just like I was saying to Judy, it is not your job to know what will come of it. You cannot know what will come of it. Oprah Winfrey said, The universe's dream for you is way bigger than your own, and it's absolutely true. You have no idea what is waiting for you. You cannot know. You do not have that vision. You are nearsighted, necessarily so. Your job is not to know the future. Your job is to be as interested as possible in the present moment. Writing takes place. The canvas of creation is the present moment. You cannot create in the past. You cannot create the future. You can only create what is right here, right now. And the more success I have had, and Jeff, I used to pull my hair out over my lack of success when I was a younger man. Why isn't it happening? what's going to happen? Will this book finally break through? Will this break through? Will this break through? Why? What about this one? I had all my thoughts about the future and how worried I was about it. It was when I finally stopped worrying about the future and let myself sink for those 45 minutes into those blogs and let myself just have them completely, thinking as I wrote them, well, it doesn't matter. Nobody's actually going to read them, but I just like writing them, so who cares, which was the best thought I ever had in my life, just the thought I would recommend for every author. I love them. That's enough. When I learned that I love them, that's enough, suddenly things began taking care of themselves. I know it sounds magical, but the beauty of it is it's simple. It's not your job to know the future. What's this fellow's name? Who asked the question?
That's actually just a general question. Oh, I'm sorry, Hudo.
Hudo, and what's his first name?
I just moved it down. Hold on one moment.
Don't worry about it.
Russ Hudo.
Russ. Russ, it's not your job to know the future. It's not your job. It's not your job. It's not your job. It never has been. You don't have to know where this is going to go. But I guarantee you, if you give yourself fully to it, if you give yourself to it and do not doubt it, the less you doubt, the more it will come. You don't have to know the future. And simply thinking, I must know the future, fills you with a fear and a doubt for the present, in the present. Your job is to enjoy the present and let that be enough, which is an excellent place for us to pause. It's enough, people. Writing and simply enjoying writing is enough. And all the things you want, all the money and success and attention and all those sort of end results that seem so attractive, that will all come. But it all grows out of your loving, curious, interested attention to the moment. That's where it comes from. That's where it comes from. It's where it comes from. It's where it comes from. That's why it happens. It's not your job to know what's going
to
happen.
And I'd like
but
to
I do know
you.
This is going to happen, Jeff. I'm taking next week off. I won't be
yes,
here. My family's coming into town.
Wonderful interview coming up. And Bill, to end the show, if you would allow me, I'd like to tell people to go to your website and also to Amazon to purchase your seminal book on writing, Write Within Yourself, an Author's Companion. And if people want to work with you, where can they find you?
They can go to williamkanauer.com, where you can contact me via email. I can work with you one-on-one. I can talk to your little writing group. If you got a writing group, I can even do it via Skype or FaceTime. Or I could come to your writing conference, and I would love to teach a fearless writing class or a memoir class or many other things. So williamkanauer.com. We're going to, like I said, take next week off. The week after that I'll be doing an interview, but I think we're going to come back and do this again the week after that. What do you think, Jeff?
I'm so looking forward to it, Bill.
Oh, it's awesome. Well, until then, everybody, remember, just find a story you love to tell and tell it for the only reason, for one reason and one reason only, and that's because you want to tell it. Do it, and I'll see you in a couple.